I'm Alice Arnold, and this week on the Musicals and Theatre Podcast, I'm chatting to Jade Ewan about her role in Aladdin and much more. If you enjoy listening, then please tune in on Saturday and Sunday mornings, where you'll find me on Mellow Magic from 6 till 10. Right, well, I'm Alice Arnold, and for my podcast, I am in the studio with Jade Ewan, and you are currently starring in Aladdin, which is thrilling. Now, Jade, of course, used to be a member of the Sugar Babes, but now you're a star just all on your own, without the rest of them, and we're really thrilled that you could come in and chat. So, did you ever think you would be a real-life fairy princess?
No, I didn't. I used to... Like, me and my sister every year would watch the Disney films because my mum would get them on the VHS. And my favourites were, like, Little Mermaid and Belle from Beauty and the Beast. But then when I saw Jasmine, I was like, she's, like, the ultimate one. And on top of that, she kind of looked a bit like me. So I was, like, I just loved her. I loved the songs, A Whole New World. So it was kind of one of those things that you just grow up with and you kind of forget. You don't really think much about it. I realised later on in life it was probably my earliest introduction to music because you start learning the songs at home. And then this came up last year. And at first, nobody told me what I was auditioning for. It was all top secret. And then they call me in. And of course, when you hear the music, you know exactly what it is.
Oh, so you couldn't go dressed as a princess for the audition?
No. Oh. Do you know, I considered it. I was like, for the finals, I was like, do I? Because they say you should come with kind of essence of the person that you're trying. But I was like, it might be a bit much to like rock up with a tiara and a sari and all the jewels. Yes. So I was like, I'll go in like a green dress with some gold accessories. But some people really went for it. But I found out later on, the casting director and the directors were like, oh, we can't bear it when people do that. It just becomes like a pantomime thing. So I was like, oh, thank goodness I didn't.
Yeah. So now let's go back. You're still, obviously, you're only 28, aren't you? So you're really young, but we're going to go back to when you were even younger.
Gosh.
And you started at Sylvia Young, or you got a scholarship to Sylvia Young.
Yeah, I did,
When you were 10 or something.
Yeah, I started when I was 11. And at the time, I was doing a musical then. I was doing Whistle Down the Wind, Andrew Lloyd Webber's musical. And then I auditioned for The Lion King and ended up playing young Nala.
And so you were a child star?
Yeah, well, I mean, not really a star, but I definitely did start off doing it quite early. But I remember thinking when I was doing The Lion King that it was the realisation that I wanted to perform, like, live to audiences, and that I thought, oh, when I'm big, I'm going to do this seriously. So, yeah.
So you always knew.
Yeah, really. Definitely.
And then after Sylvia Young, what happened immediately after you left there?
Well, immediately I went to Australia because I was doing a children's TV series. So I was there for 8 months and I'd never been on a plane anywhere. So the first time I ever flew, I went to the other side of the world, which was really cool. It was for BBC and Nickelodeon, and it was called Out There. And then when I got back, I was kind of figuring out what I wanted to do because my passion had always been singing, but it felt like it was a natural progression to go into theatre or TV. And then I was offered my first record deal with Sony BMG, and I was in a group then that we didn't end up releasing music, but it was a three-piece group. And that sort of started off my whole music career. I was doing a lot of writing and touring, and yeah, it was like, I think Sugar Babes became the fourth record deal. So it was quite a process, you know, between the first deal and that one.
Yeah, it wasn't the first one that immediately happened.
Yeah.
And you had quite a challenging childhood, really, because both your parents are visually impaired.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. And I know that you're quite concerned about, because you did a lot of caring for your siblings and stuff when you were growing up and for your parents. And again, you're quite involved in helping young carers and the work that they do or raising money to help them.
Yeah, I try and do as much as I can, yeah, because just as a kid, like, I didn't know anybody else that had parents with disabilities. And so with my dad, he's always been blind. But then he lost his hearing in his left ear, which then, because he used to work, it just made it too difficult for him to be in a work environment because it throws off your balance and stuff. And so my mum was basically the main provider. But then my mum developed a condition. She's always been blind in one eye, but she developed something called myasthenia gravis, and it just affects your whole mobility and your immune system. And she was then in hospital every month, you know, doing courses of treatments and steroids and all sorts of things. So I was in school. I was about 15, 16 when this happened. I was trying to do my GCSEs and it was like everything just fell apart. And I, you know, I didn't even know how to make a bacon sandwich. Like, I was terrible. And suddenly I was responsible. I'm the oldest of three. Like, trying to make sure, because my mum wasn't there, like, that we would all eat and, you know, pay bills and, you know, get the electric on the key and all of that stuff on the meat. It was just like a real fast track into sort of being mature and taking on responsibility. But so at the time when I'd try and speak to my school friends, nobody could relate, you know, because they weren't doing those things. And it was just a complete unique situation. So when I heard about the Carers Trust, who I work with, and it's an organisation to help other children in the same position, it felt nice. I felt like, oh, like, at least you feel like there are other people. They can't necessarily make your life easier day to day, but just to speak to somebody else who understands. And hopefully it's kind of inspiring that I've gone on to do other stuff, because a lot of the time you have to compromise yourself, because it just isn't, you feel guilty about being selfish or ambitious because you've got other people that are dependent on you.
So you really overcame all the odds and battled through, and here you are being amazingly successful, which is a fantastic lesson to any young person, I think, or an example to any young person.
Thank you. But
let's go back to when you were only 21 and you represented the UK in the Eurovision Song Contest. And so how did that all come about?
So that was kind of an accident. I was auditioning for a TV show on the BBC, and it was called Myths. It was a children's drama. And I was originally auditioning for A Goddess That Sung. So my audition tape was kept by a casting director who then somehow, I don't know why, suggested me for the Eurovision competition, Your Country Needs You. And they watched it at the BBC, and then they called me up and said, would you be interested? And I was like, no, I don't want to do it. I was like, the Eurovision's cursed. We never come anywhere. I'm not doing it. And they had to keep trying to convince me. And I was like, I'm not doing it. Anyway, they said that Andrew Lloyd Webber was going to be writing the song for the winner, along with Diane Warren. And
That's Diane Warren, I remember really clearly.
Yeah, I love her. Like, all of my biggest influences and the artists that I look up to, she's written songs for. So I was like, oh, that kind of changes things. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, I'll go along. I didn't expect to win at all, because it was a big nationwide search, as you all saw. And then just week by week, I kept getting voted in or just not voted out. So I was like, what happens if I actually win? I've got to go and represent us. And then I did end up doing it. But it was such a fun experience, because I didn't realise the scale of it. Like, here, it's one thing. But as soon as you leave the UK, and I was doing it in Moscow, but we had to do a tour, it's just like pandemonium. Everybody, you have to have security everywhere. I remember being with Andrew and just sort of like, following him around, because I was like, I don't know what to do. And he was really nervous, and he didn't really want to go on and perform. And I was like, you've only got to sit at the piano.
Yeah,
I've got to sing.
He was playing the piano for
you,
wasn't he?
Yeah, we had a standby pianist, because he was pretty nervous about the whole thing. So just in case he didn't go on, I was like, I don't have a standby. But it was crazy. It was really fun. But I remember thinking after that, well, I was told, like, there was 122 million people watched live. So you kind of feel like once you've done that, that you can pretty much do anything, because nothing is going to be as scary.
And the other thing was, you came fifth, which for us is brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, nowadays we're lucky if we get any points at all.
I know, at the time.
You know, and we weren't getting any points before that either, which is why they brought in Andrew Lloyd Webber, to try and, you know, up the ante a bit.
Yeah.
And that was amazing to leap from, I think you were the highest score for the last 10 years or something.
Oh, love it. At the time I was like, no, I really wanted to come top three. But in hindsight, I'm like, that was a really good job, because it's just so tough. It really was.
So then you got into that. Now tell me about how you joined the Sugar Babes, because that was a bit of a surprise too, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was. So I kind of touched on it before about the previous record deals I'd had. When I'd won Your Country Needs You, I had a singles deal with Universal, but I had no management at the time. And then I was looking for music management, and they were called Crown, and Crown looked after the Sugar Babes. So after my single was put out, they were talking about how to launch me as Jade in my own right, as a solo artist. And there was all this stuff going on with, like, radio airplay, which I'm sure you all know about, and getting playlisted. And quite literally, it was really difficult to get playlisted, because I guess the public perception of Jade was the big power ballad, Andrew Lloyd Webber Eurovision thing, and my own personal material was nothing like that. And so management came in to speak to me, and they were like, we feel like you should join the Sugar Babes. One of the members are leaving. It'll be a great opportunity and platform for you. And depending on how well the group does, you can always go back and do your own solo material. And it was probably the hardest decision I've ever made, because I felt like I was walking away from my dream, and I had a lot of artistic input in my material, but I recognised I'd already been here before with previous deals and they don't work out. And so it's one thing to get a deal, but actually releasing music and is a totally different thing. And so I thought, right, I'm going to try and make a mature decision here and go on, make a business decision and join the band. And I remember flying out to meet them, and I didn't know who I was meeting because I didn't know who I was replacing.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
You didn't know who was dropping? Oh.
No, nobody told me anything.
Oh.
And they'd said I didn't have to make a definitive decision until I'd met the girls. So I was kind of cooped up in a hotel for 4 days, like with no one. I couldn't speak to anyone. My mum didn't even know where I was. I was like, yeah, I'll be back, mum. She didn't know where I was. And then I met them in a hotel room in LA. And the following day, we were on our way to do a rehearsal to figure out some choreography because they were supposed to be shooting the video that week. And then on the way, it was like paparazzi everywhere, photos everywhere. So that moment, it just kind of went everywhere into the UK sun. So then I was like, I guess I'm a sugar babe now then, because there's no one had the conversation like it's official. It just kind of happened. So I was like, well, too late to back down now, right?
And did you feel like you sort of fitted in straight away, or did it take a while to blend into the group?
It took a while, and not because the girls weren't welcoming, but because they'd been together for so long. So it was like, I think Amel had been in the band for 6 years, Heidi had been in the band for 12. So it's like a family. And even though Keisha left and the whole thing that happened, I think they were still really sad that it's like a breakup, you know, the end of a chapter. So they were still grieving someone when I came in, and they were lovely, but I just felt like, oh gosh, this is their family, and they have their own team of people that they've got history and relationships with. So it wasn't easy. It definitely wasn't.
Well, now here you are in musical theatre.
So, yeah.
And do you think this is the way you're going to go on now, or mix the two? Or
yeah, I don't know. If I'm totally honest, every time I've ever tried to plan something, it never goes the way I think it's going to go. So things have kind of just come up now by accident, but they've been amazing. Like this, doing this now, playing Jasmine and Aladdin is probably the best thing that's ever happened to me. So I think I'm going to always continue to perform. I'm not sure in which form it will be. I'd love to do more film and TV. I did my first film last year and I loved it. So I'm hoping it will go in that direction. But
back to musicals. to ask you some sort of general questions about musical theatre. And the first one being, what is your favourite? What's your favourite musical of all time?
Not
necessarily
all time.
One you've been in, but just your favourite musical.
Well, mine was actually Dreamgirls. But I want to see Amber Riley in Dreamgirls, and I haven't managed to yet. But I went to a preview, and unfortunately she was sick, so her understudy had to go on. But it's done by the director's called Casey Nicolore, who's also directed Aladdin, but Book of Mormon as well. So he's done like a variety of shows. They're all quite different. But I loved the fact that Dreamgirls kind of incorporated like the old time sort of classic feel and inspired by the Supremes. And it was like all the glamour and the live elements, the costumes and the songs were so soulful. And then, of course, they brought out the film with Beyoncé and Jennifer Hudson. So I was just really fascinated to see how that translates onto stage now with a modern twist.
And if it runs for a while, you could be in it.
Maybe that could be the next one. But you know what? I don't envy those girls trying to sing those songs 8 shows a week. They are all so high and really, you know, they're big.
And powerful, they're big numbers, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yes. It's not a laid back. Right, your next question. If you were a character from any musical, who would you like to be? And I don't mean who would you like to play. Who would you like to be?
In real life.
In real life, a musical character. Who would you like to be?
I think I'd want to be I need to think about that. I'd want to be somebody really out there. Just like, I mean, because I think about it all the time. Like, for example, maybe a character from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, like an Oompa Loompa.
That's a great
just
answer.
Just the opposite to me.
That's a great answer. Be an Oompa Loompa. Yeah. I love that. Now, if you could sing one song from a musical, what would you choose?
I really like... Oh, that's hard. I really like Wicked as a musical. And I did love singing Defying Gravity.
Yeah.
But if I only had to sing it once, that's great. If I had to sing it 8 times a week again, maybe I would be upset about that. Shadowlands, also a beautiful song. I don't know if you know, it was from The Lion King, but it was written for Big Nala. And she talks about her homeland sort of being torn apart. And it's a really, it comes in the movie, but it's just an orchestral part. So they've given it words and brought it to life. And it's just a really moving song. So it's really beautiful.
All right. Oh, that's a nice, a different choice than we normally get.
Oh, really?
Now, here's a question you might not like much. You know how people always say, who would be your 6 favourite dinner party guests and all of that? Well, on this we ask, who would you least like to take to the theatre with you? Who would be your nightmare companion sitting next to you?
This is going to be really bad. Probably my best friend. Because she talks through everything.
Well, that's a really good reason.
She talks through everything. I'm like, if you would just stop talking, because she's like, what happened? I missed it. I'm like, because you're talking, you see? So if you just watch it. And then she's always, it's like somebody who goes to the cinema and watches a film with you and they're like, oh, so what happens at the end? Do you reckon? I'm like, I don't know. I've not seen it. Let's both just watch it. So probably my best friend.
Okay, well, there we go. You're not going to name her, obviously. No. And have you got any pets?
I don't have any pets, no. But I did grow up with a Labrador because my dad has a guide dog and his name is Zim and he's beautiful.
Oh,
he's really lovely.
I was with a guide dog the other day. Amazing. If you have a normal dog, which I do, which is incredibly badly behaved and doesn't do anything, just to watch a guide dog work is so amazing.
Yeah, you know, I can imagine.
Stay still.
Yeah.
If I brought my dog in here now, he would be sniffing all over the place and running everywhere and eating whatever he could find. And I just think it's amazing to have a dog so well trained that it wouldn't just see a bun and think, oh, I'll have that.
Yeah.
You know? You grew up with that.
I did. But when you choose a new dog, they kind of have to like pair them up to, you know, check that their working relationship's good. So there was one that my dad fell in love with at the guide dog centre, but he was naughty. Well, he wasn't naughty, but he was just a bit of a rebel. So he's probably a bit more like a normal dog. And so in the end, they couldn't give it. He didn't graduate.
Oh, no, he failed.
I was like, but please, can we just keep him anyway? Because to me, he's like, he's a character.
Yeah, just useless as a guide dog.
Yeah.
But nice to be around.
Yeah.
So what's next? You don't know, really. How long are we in Aladdin for?
Everyone's offered a year's contract. So my contract is up in June. Mm. So I've done 6 months so far, well, including rehearsals. And then there's discussions about whether we would like to stay on. And they've asked me if I will stay on. So at the moment, I'm saying yes because I love it. But who knows? I don't know there's still so much. I've got to finish this contract yet. And then I think the next one will end in 2018. So it feels like quite a long way away. So we'll see what else comes up.
But still, the world's your oyster, really.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, Jade, thank you so much for coming in and chatting to us. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. It was lovely to talk to you too.
I'm Alice Arnold, and that was the Musicals and Theatre Podcast. If you enjoyed that, then you can hear me every Saturday and Sunday morning from 6 till 10 on Mellow Magic, where I've lots of lovely, timeless, relaxing classics, musical numbers, and interviews.